Current state here on 90.5. WKAR, thank you for joining us. Take a look in your medicine cabinet or your shower, and you're likely to find microbeads. Those are the small plastic spheres used as exfoliants in products like face wash or toothpaste. The tiny beads have been big news since scientists found them showing up in the Great Lakes several years ago. Last week, Michigan became the latest state to introduce legislation that would ban products containing microbeads. Melissa Duhame is a researcher in the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Michigan. She's been researching the impact of microplastic pollution in the Great Lakes, and she joins us by phone now. Welcome, Melissa.
Thanks.
How are these plastic beads making their way into the Great Lakes then?
Well, the idea that scientists have come to is that, especially those that are derived from the personal care products, as you're just describing, are finding their way down our sinks and out of our drains into our wastewater treatment plant facilities. And as all of the effluent passes out of those wastewater treatment plants, it makes its way to the Great Lakes and the watersheds of the Great Lakes. Mm. So effectively through the drains and out the wastewater treatment plants.
Yeah. This first became news a couple of summers ago when a research team from the nonprofit Five Gyres and a SUNY researcher, State University of New York researcher, found large amounts of these in the Great Lakes. What do we know about how much of this plastic gets into the lakes? How much is out there? Do we know that?
Well, the numbers that we got from those first reports were upwards in the range of about 500,000 small particles per kilometer squared. So it's like a surface area measurement. And some of the greatest numbers from that report were in the eastern parts of Lake Erie. And since then, the same group has looked into Lake Ontario and found numbers over 1 million particles per square kilometer. So the numbers are equal to and greater than some of the highest abundances that we've found in the oceans. So it's a pretty high number.
Mm. Could water treatment facilities do a better job at filtering out these minuscule particles?
I think that would be one of the least cost-effective ways to reduce the number of particles that are out there. So a lot of the treatment plants that we're using right now are several decades old, and it would be quite expensive to upgrade them and really impractical in an attempt to remove the beads or minimize the number of beads that are entering our waterways. I think at this point, probably the fastest and most cost-effective measure would be through legislation.
But their technology is simply not equipped for such tiny particles? Is that the issue?
There are a few newer plants that use things like sand filtration that can remove the small particles down to a few micron. So the particles that we're looking at are about a third of a millimeter in size, and that's technically small enough to pass through the current, like most of the current wastewater treatment plants that are out there. It's just too expensive to retrofit the existing plants to deal with these small particles.
We're talking about microplastic pollution in the Great Lakes, microbeads. Our guest today is University of Michigan researcher Melissa Duhame, who's been looking at the ecological impact of microbeads and microfibers. What do we know about how fish or other wildlife are being impacted?
Well, we're just starting to get a handle on that in the Great Lakes. So one of the goals of the current project we're working on, funded by the University of Michigan's Water Center, is to get a better understanding of the greater ecosystem impacts of these small particles that we know to be out there. And so one of the questions we're asking there is if we collect fish in these environments, so from, for instance, Lake Erie, and we take a look at their stomach content, we can pick out and identify particles that look like plastic and then later identify them as plastic. And we've been doing just that. And we've found across several species of fish collected from Lake Erie, plastic in their stomachs. But the intriguing thing is that the microbeads are not the only story. So we actually haven't found these small, perfectly spherical particles in the fish stomachs, but rather we find the fish are ingesting things like fibers and filaments that we can confirm as being plastic. And if you look at these pieces under the microscope, they look a lot like clothing lint. And they're most likely plastics that are actually in our clothing, especially fleece and nylon, polyester. Most of what we wear is actually made of plastic. And researchers have done experiments such as collecting water that runs out of washing machines while washing these plastic-containing garments. And they see these fibers coming out of washing machines at high abundances. And they'll find their way into the wastewater treatment plants the same way that the microbeads are from our personal care products.
So microbeads and microfibers, when did these microfibers first become a concern? When did they start showing up?
Well, actually, some of the earliest reports, even before people started to recognize the prevalence of microbeads, were coming out of the UK more than 10 years ago. So the fibers we've known about for some time, it was the first study that took place in the Great Lakes. It was published just at the end of 2013 that identified these perfectly spherical microbeads as being of the highest size and shape class that were found in the Great Lakes. So it seems to be an important Great Lakes topic, these microbeads.
Now, I'm led to believe that fish also excrete some number of the microbeads. They're able to completely go through the fish's system, but that's less the case with these microfibers. Do I have that right?
We actually haven't done comprehensive studies on the fate of the plastics in the Great Lakes fish species. What we've done is just taking the fish from the environment and had a look at their stomach contents. So we haven't done experiments yet with live fish, but there's a growing body of work from particularly ocean fish and mussels and crabs and worms that live in the sediment that have shown a lot of intriguing things about what happens to plastic when ingested. And the story gets quite complicated. It depends on the species, the organism, and how their digestive tract is set up. So, for instance, mussels, we know plastics can stay inside their body for up to 50 days, whereas other organisms can, they have a special mechanism to divert the plastic particles or small particles to be excreted rather than through their digestive system the way that food is. So it's really not straightforward.
I see this was very interesting in some of the reading I did for this segment. I see some corporations have already responded to this by creating exfoliants out of fruit pits, as I recall.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's true. So I think that it speaks to possibly even more strongly as to why it makes sense to ban them in personal care products, because they are so unnecessary that there are naturally derived products to replace them. For instance, apricot pits seem to be a common thing, as well as oatmeal and some other materials. And there are a lot of big companies like L'Oreal and Colgate and Unilever, Johnson & Johnson, I think The Body Shop is among them, that are voluntarily phasing them out. But I think that the banning them will further spark innovation to help us find suitable substitutes that can be used in other applications. So microbeads and personal care products, the only place they're used, but rather also in sandblasting for industrial purposes. And I've even heard reports of them being thrown down on shipping docks for friction. So the personal care products are just one way they're making it into our watersheds, but there are other applications that we need to find substitutes for as well.
Has the apparel industry responded to the microfiber situation at all?
You know, I think we need more reports of the prevalence of these fibers and confirmation that they're definitely coming from the clothing for it to be as big of an issue as right now the microbeads are. It was very straightforward to pinpoint where these perfectly spherical particles were coming from, because you can just have a look back into the personal care products and say, these look identical to what we're finding in the environment. I think it's a bit trickier now with the clothing to confirm exactly where they're coming from, and also to talk about realistic substitutes. And it's quite remarkable how much of our clothing has plastic in it, but I think discussing it and becoming more aware of it as consumers is the best place to start.
We're talking about microplastic pollution in the Great Lakes. Our guest today is University of Michigan researcher Melissa Duhame. What are researchers like yourself most concerned about when it comes to how these microplastics are impacting the ecosystem?
Well, I think that what we need to do is get a better understanding of where the issue of the impact of these plastics falls on the scale of on the spectrum of all the threats that, for instance, the Great Lakes face. So there are a lot of everything from relic, heavy metal pollution, contaminants, to now we are also dealing with issues of the harmful algal blooms and toxins produced by these algal blooms. So there are a lot of things that we deal with in the Great Lakes on a day-to-day basis. And I think we need to get a better understanding of where the threat of plastic falls on this spectrum. And to do that, we need to confirm that they are making their way into the food web and that there is a direct impact on some of the organisms at the base of the food web that could then escalate into bigger, for instance, economic issues. One way this might manifest, for instance, is if we were to confirm that the fish are consuming huge amounts of plastic in place of their normal food sources, then you would see them effectively starving, because we know that when organisms are eating plastic, they're not getting the nutrition they might need.
Okay, but we have to leave it there. I'm very sorry. We're out of time. We've got to leave it there.
Okay,
but this has been very informative. We've been talking about the ecological impacts of microplastic pollution in the Great Lakes. Our guest, Melissa Duhame, a researcher in the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Michigan. Thank you, Melissa.
Yeah, thank you.